Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Ken Gagne. Ken, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Scott. I've been a fan of your show for a while. I've listened to many of my friends come on the show. I'm happy to have my turn.
Well, see, there you go. I'm just going through your social circle. So
you were circling me, going in for the kill.
That's right. Now I've pounced like an overeager podcaster. So tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Ken Gagne. I work by day in social media and communications and marketing in the healthcare industry. By night, I teach in the publishing department of a college in Boston. I'm a freelance writer for Computer World magazine. I host the YouTube channel Game Bits, where I do unboxings and Let's Plays. I'm the host of two podcasts of my own, Polygamer and IndieCider, and I am the editor-in-chief of the last remaining print publication dedicated to the Apple II computer.
What is the name of the last remaining print publication dedicated to the Apple II computer?
It is Juiced.gs, and it is currently in its 21st year of publication.
That is impressive. So
Thank you.
You must have a – we'll get to Star Trek, but you must have a passion for the Apple II.
Yeah, it's the machine I grew up with. My dad brought one home when I was like 4 years old, and it's no longer my main machine, of course, but I still have a couple of different Apple IIs here, and I even go to an annual convention for it in Kansas City every July.
I kind of wish it was still your main machine and that somehow you were podcasting through Skype with your Apple II. I don't know how that is even possible. But
I've thought about it. The Apple II GS had some impressive audio qualities, but I don't think Skype was one of them.
No. And when I was in elementary school, we had a computer lab. And it was full of Apple IIs, and it was always my favorite class to go to because basically we just played games on the Apple II, so it wasn't really a class. I don't even know why we were doing it. But we played a game, you know, Logo maybe? Is that where you move the turtle around or something? There's some turtle-based thing, and there was a Garfield program that I liked to play a lot. The Apple II.
You haven't mentioned Oregon Trail.
I didn't really play Oregon Trail, oddly enough. I know. But I have fond memories of the dual floppy disk drives. The kids listening, they don't know what floppy disks are. But
Those 5 1/4 inch, they're probably wondering, you're talking about the save icon in Word, right?
Exactly. The bad old days, as they say, because computers now. My iMac that I'm working on right now is far superior in every respect, except for nostalgia.
I do have an Apple II emulator on my MacBook Pro here.
Oh, well, see, there you go. Indeed. I didn't even know those existed, but I guess it makes sense. So we're not here to talk about the Apple II, although I enjoy it. And I bet some Apple IIs were involved in the making of Star Trek at some point along the way. But we're here to talk about Star Trek. So I will ask my kind of boilerplate question here. I already know the answer to this, but I like to ask it anyway. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Do people say no to that?
Yes, I've had several guests on who have said no. One episode featured Lex Fridman, who had never seen anything Star Trek related until the episode of Enterprise I assigned to him.
I will have to go back and listen to that one. But to answer your question, yes, I am absolutely a Trekkie. I have been a Trekkie ever since my father sat me down on when did The Next Generation air? September something? September 28th, 1987, my dad came to me and said that there was a show he used to watch, which debuted just 2 weeks after he got married. And so basically Star Trek and my parents had the same anniversary. And in 1987, he came to me and said, there's a new show starting tonight that's a sequel to a show I used to watch, and I thought it'd be fun if we watched it together. And I said, that'd be great. Who wouldn't want to do something with their dad? Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I saw Star Trek, The Next Generation. I was 8 years old.
And now you've never looked back.
No, not really. I watched Star Trek with my dad throughout Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, most of Enterprise, and it's one of the fondest memories I have of him. Actually, as you and I were discussing earlier, Tuvix is one of the first episodes I've ever watched without him because he just passed away a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry for your loss. As we were discussing, and as Random Trek fans know, my mother passed away a couple weeks ago as well. So she was not a Star Trek fan, really. but she encouraged my fandom and my appreciation of Star Trek by, not changing the channel when I obsessively watched Star Trek. So
and
I,
she came on this show, correct?
She did. And she watched – I made her watch an episode of Voyager, which she fell asleep halfway through. But
that's wonderful. I mean, I have a podcast about video games, and I had my dad come on that show last summer to talk about his history with video games.
Well, see, there you go. Everybody, yeah. If you're listening to this and you have a podcast – you should invite your parents on, no matter what the topic is, because I will tell you, I can guarantee you, you will find out something about your parents you never knew before just by talking about something that they may be not even that interested in. And of course, they'll do it because they're your parents and they love you and they want to make you happy. So that's my...
And it's a wonderful keepsake.
It is certainly a wonderful keepsake because, you know, you have to treasure the time you have with them because... at least speaking for myself, you know, your parents are around forever. You've known them, obviously, your entire life. So you don't really expect that they will go away one day. And in fact, they do. And so it's not easy, but it is nice to have this kind of memento of them. So, you know, this episode has taken a maudlin turn. but I think it is to be expected since we've both gone through this loss very recently.
Yeah, I'm sorry for your loss.
Well, thank you for that. But you know, Star Trek is something that actually I turn to relieve a little of my sorrow. I have been slowly watching through Deep Space Nine with my wife because she's never seen all of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, wonderful.
And so we started up that. We had kind of a hiatus while we were helping my mom with a bunch of stuff. Now we've started up again. So it's nice to, you know, revisit these episodes and laugh at, you know, Quark and Odo and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But let's talk about your favorite Star Trek series.
Oh, gosh.
If you had to pick one, because I'm asking you, so you do kind of have to pick one now.
Right. Well, I love all the Star Treks. Just the fact that it is Star Trek makes it good. But some Star Treks are better than others.
Yes.
And so I'm going to have to sort of qualify this, if I may, where The Next Generation, it was my first Star Trek, and I love the show to death. Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, I watched each one beginning to end, and then I never went back and rewatched them. Like, I've only seen each episode of that show once when it first aired.
Mm-hmm.
But Next Generation, I will go back and just watch over and over. And I love the cast and the crew. I love the environment. I love the episodic nature. We can watch it out of order. And so, for all those reasons, and for it being my first Star Trek, it's one of my favorites. But, as far as the quality of the storytelling goes, I got to give mad props to Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the serial nature and how it went from a beginning to an end across 7 years, and the changing cast that it was always rotating in and out. You had a different Dax. You had General Martok come and go, Worf, different people. But I would not want to live on Deep Space Nine. I would want to live on the NCC 1701D. I would want to work with those people. Deep Space Nine, the place, the people, I would be scared for my life every day.
You know, it's never even occurred to me. I often think about what Captain, well often is a relative term, but I often think about what Captain I'd want to serve under if I were in the Star Trek universe. In fact, I was having this discussion just the other day with my aunt's husband, who I guess is my uncle. But it has never occurred to me to think about where I'd want to live in the Star Trek universe. Deep Space Nine, I would not want to live either. I agree
right.
with you.
I mean, going to Quarks might be fun, but I don't think it offsets all the negatives.
No, there's not a lot of good, not a lot of upside there on Deep Space Nine. Bajor seems like a lovely planet.
Indeed.
And you know, Captain Sisko wants to retire to Bajor. I could see that. I wouldn't want to live on Bajor either because I find Bajorans kind of annoying. But the planet itself seems nice.
Yeah, it's actually where Cassidy retired to in the 8th season of the novels.
Oh, we'll see. And there you go.
She had a lovely life there.
So I think, you know, it seems bucolic. They have lots of all the modern, amenities, but I was just we're on the third season of Deep Space Nine, and this one features an episode where the Cardassian systems you know, are accidentally tripped, and they think that there's a worker revolution, and they're, you know, slowly trying to kill everyone on the station.
Oh, that was a fun one.
And that was a good episode.
And then Gul Dukat shows up and gets caught in his own trap.
Exactly. So I like that episode. I like Cardassians. I like all that stuff. But I don't want to live on a station designed by Cardassians with
right.
all of these death traps built into it. I'll take the Enterprise, even though the Enterprise also seems like a deadly place. But
at least the holodecks are free.
That is true. But you can't play Dabo. I guess you can play Dabo on the holodeck. But
there you go.
You won't lose any money.
Nope.
And you can't drink any alcoholic beverages, just synthahol. Darn Federation.
But you know, who would you rather have as a bartender, Quark or Guinan?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think I would pick Guinan just because she's nicer than Quark is, but Quark is funnier.
Yeah, but I would rather get advice from Guinan.
Oh, yes. Never take advice from Quark. I think
take advice from a Ferengi? Is that one of the rules of acquisition?
It should be if it isn't, because they don't give good advice.
No.
All right. Well, we haven't really talked about Voyager. You mentioned it a little bit, but we did not watch a Next Generation episode. We did not watch a Deep Space Nine episode. We watched an Enterprise episode. We watched a Voyager episode, Tuvix.
Yes.
In which one of my least favorite characters in all of Star Trek is fused with a character I don't really care about. I mean, Tuvok is fine. I have no strong feelings one way or the other about Tuvok. I loathe Neelix with a passion.
And have we learned why across the various episodes of Random Trek, or could you fill me in?
I just find him incredibly annoying. I think that he is a useless character. I find his relationship with Kes to be disturbing. that pretty much sums it all up. He has his moments. I will, as I've been forced to watch more Voyager episodes because the random generator seems to love Voyager. He has his moments, but overall, I could do without Neelix.
Well, remember the episode of Deep Space Nine where Odo and Quark get stuck in the space elevator?
Yes.
That kind of reminds me of the relationship that Neelix and Tuvok have. They love each other, but they can't stand each other.
Yes. And I don't like the fact that Neelix calls Tuvok Mr. Vulcan. I always find that annoying.
It's not just annoying, it's racist.
That is true. I hadn't even thought of that. Oh, Neelix.
I mean, can you imagine like going off to someone and say, "Hello, Mr. Italian?" And like, "I have a name, excuse me."
That's true. And I think that Tuvok actually says that in this episode. And Neelix does not respect that.
No.
So what are your thoughts about, not necessarily Neelix, but we can broaden it to Voyager as a whole, or we can just focus on Neelix?
I thought the first couple of seasons were a little weak, and I'm sorry that they actually wrote off Kes. They said that they didn't know where to go with the character, and I think that's a sign of weak writing, not a weak character per se. But overall, I liked it. There were some big plot holes, like how come they're always heading towards Earth, yet wherever they're going, people seem to have already heard about Voyager.
That's good.
How does news travel faster than light speed? I don't get it.
Well, they have faster than light communications, so maybe the whole Delta Quadrant is a buzz.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I listened to your episode where they had Reginald Barclay and Dr. Zimmerman, and I like those characters. I like the tie-ins that they worked in with the other series. It was questionable why Q never just sent them home, but
it's a good question.
But I liked Voyager. I missed the Federation context that Next Generation and Deep Space Nine had, but at the same time, we got to see some new things, and I thought the Borg, although I liked the Borg, I think they got watered down in Voyager.
Well, that's because they kept bringing the Borg back and again and again and again. And I think in the later seasons of Voyager, they acted as a crutch because they didn't have a good enough original villain. I mean, the Borg is a great villain, right? But, Deep Space Nine, you look at Deep Space Nine, who is the villain there? The Cardassians, and the Dominion. Both great villains, and the Cardassians are interesting because sometimes they are villains, sometimes they aren't, and they have this complicated play. The Dominion, always bad guys, right? Enterprise has the temporal Cold War, I guess. I don't know.
Which was not a good idea.
Well, not a good idea, but they had it at least. So it was like this thing. And then I feel like with Voyager, they tried with the Kazon.
And the Kazon were supposed to be like the Voyager's version of the Klingons, and it just didn't work.
It didn't work. They were stupid, and nobody cared.
Nope.
And so they were like, how about the Borg? Everybody likes the Borg, which is true. And they made it interesting with Seven of Nine, so she's a former Borg, but she's trying to adjust to her human nature, and that make her an interesting character. But then, you know, every other episode, you're stumbling into the Borg. It takes a little of the threat and the menace out of them if they're always around.
I did like the time travel episodes, though, like Future's End, and also the episode where every deck was a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
I thought those were fun.
Yeah, and I have if I had to rank Star Trek series, which I have done several times, Voyager wouldn't be at the bottom. It would be second to the bottom, thanks to Enterprise. But I like it. I mean, like you said in the beginning, I was happy when you said that all Star Trek is good Star Trek. Yes, I like all of the Star Treks. It's just I like some of them more than others.
Now, see, I would put Enterprise at the bottom if it weren't for the fourth season, which, in my opinion, is some of the best Trek ever told.
The fourth season is very good of Enterprise. I will give you that. But I feel like it's not good enough to outweigh the first three seasons.
Fair enough.
Plus, I don't like Archer.
But see, I like Scott Bakula.
Oh, I like Scott Bakula. I don't like Captain Archer, which makes it difficult for me to watch Enterprise.
But also, Enterprise is the only Star Trek that exists in the J.J. Abrams universe.
That is true. I hadn't given that thought, but that's right. So that happens all before the timeline has altered. So Enterprise is still canon.
It's the only canon Star Trek.
Which is kind of sad. But let's talk about, we can pivot to talking about this new Star Trek series, and we don't know where it's going to be set. We don't know if it's set in the J.J. Abrams universe or if it's set in the, I guess we'll call it Classic Trek. I don't know what the people call it. But what are your hopes? Do you hope that they continue within the J.J. Abrams universe, or that they have more of a Classic Trek, or that they just ignore it and do whatever they want?
I hope they resolve the Axanar lawsuit.
Well, so that's, people may not be aware of Axanar. There's the Paramount and CBS. It's unclear to me who does what. Maybe CBS has kind of turned a blind eye to fan-produced things, right? And I think the basic thing was, if you don't make money off of it, we don't really care. And so there have been a number of really high quality Star Trek fan produced series. One of them is Axanar, right? And they're doing a movie or something, and then CBS lawyers got upset and they're suing people.
So I don't know what they're going to do, but as it is legally complicated, if I understand correctly, and I might not, I think Paramount owns the Star Trek movies and CBS owns the Star Trek TV show.
That sounds right to me.
And so if that's true, CBS may not have the rights to set a series in the J.J. Abrams universe.
That is also true. Star Trek is a complicated cultural artifact in that respect, because it's kind of like the Marvel universe, right? What is it? 20th Century Fox owns the mutants and X-Men.
And then there's Sony, and then there's Disney.
And then there's Sony, and then there's Disney owns everything else, and Sony owns the rights to what? Spider-Man?
I think Sony owns something. Spider-Man, and Fox owns X-Men and Fantastic Four. And then Disney owns everything else. And yet, they made a plan, an arrangement, so that Spider-Man could show up in the new Captain America film.
I know, I was going to say. I'm sure that CBS, if I were in charge of CBS and Paramount, which I am not, shocker. First of all, there would have been a Star Trek series on TV already, because I feel like Star Trek works best on the TV in a serialized format. And so we really need Star Trek on TV.
Completely agree.
But I would also work with Paramount and just set it in the J.J. Abrams universe, because that's, you know, I know that some Star Trek fans really don't like the J.J. Abrams universe. I added an extra J for jealous. I don't know. But I think it's fun. And I think that there's a limited amount of things that you can do in a big action movie, right? And people are upset. Oh, Star Trek isn't supposed to be action movie. It's supposed to be more cerebral and tell this, you know, allegories and all this good stuff.
Yep.
And I agree with that, I agree with that on a television series. That is what it's supposed to do. At a movie, you've got an hour and a half, 2 hours at the most, unless you're the motion picture, and then you got like 8 hours to tell a story, and you want it to be entertaining, and so stuff blows up, and people do funny things, and then you're done.
But Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, that had a good balance, in my opinion, of diplomacy and action.
Yes, that is true, and it's one of the best Star Trek movies, what is your feeling on the J.J. Abrams universe?
I thought the reboot was phenomenal. It was exactly what the franchise needed to inject new life into it and to demonstrate to a weary audience that Star Trek is still relevant. However, I'm not sure it was necessarily Star Trek for all the reasons we just discussed, the lack of diplomacy. I was disappointed in the second film due to the lack of originality, and I'm curious to see where Star Trek Beyond goes. It's directed by Justin Lin of Fast and the Furious, correct?
Correct.
And so I don't know what that means, because I've never seen a Fantastic or a Fast and the Furious. So I don't know what to expect, but I do hope they do something original. I believe it was Carl Urban at a Star Trek convention was asked, what do you hope to do in the next Star Trek movie? And he said something original. And so we'll see. I just, I'm cautiously optimistic, as always, with any Star Trek.
Yes, and I obviously the trailer is out, so people have based a lot of things on the trailer, and a trailer is very different than the actual movie, so I am withholding judgment until I see the movie, which, of course, I will see.
And which they just started shooting new scenes for this past week.
Yes, I heard that, with the actress who's in The Expanse, whose name escapes me. And I don't know what nationality she is, so I'm not going to say, because I could pick the wrong one and then people will be upset. But she's really good, and she's going to be in the Star Trek movie, which makes me happy.
Yeah, she's from House of Sand and Fog.
Yes, that's a fantastic movie.
And The Expanse in 24.
Super depressing, though.
Yep.
So if you're looking for an uplifting movie after you heard us talk about our recent losses, do not watch The House of Sand and Fog. No. Don't watch it.
No.
But if you're looking for a good movie with a pretty sad ending, I won't tell you what happens, but it's pretty sad. House of Sand and Fog is worth your time and effort. So my point was, before we got on to the House of Sand and Fog, is that if I were in charge, I would set the TV series in the J.J. Abrams universe, because it's a tie-in. People know it. You get a lot of freedom, right? Because they have basically rebooted the whole universe, which I think you kind of need to do, because with 50 years of baggage, it's almost impossible to do anything new unless you set it, you know, thousands of years past. Ahead of time,
yep.
What in the future? That's the word I'm looking for. And so I thought it was super clever to just reboot the whole thing. Kind of said that they killed all the Vulcans, but you know, what can you do? Mm-hmm. Got to break some eggs when you're making a Star Trek omelet. So that's what I would do. Hey, Random Trek listeners. As a hirsute man and a man who sports a beard, I know a thing or two about shaving. And let me tell you, those expensive razor blades you find kind of locked up in the vault in the local pharmacy are not worth the time and effort. They're super expensive, and they don't even give you that great a shave. But I have a special deal for you. Our friends over at Harry's are celebrating their 3-year anniversary as a business. And if you're new to Harry's, I've got a special deal for you. You can try 3 of their expertly crafted 5-blade German razors. That's 15 blades, if my math is correct. A handle and shave cream for just $10 with the offer code TREK. That's TREK. Now, I'm telling you, the shave is unlike any you'll have before, and the value. Can I go on about the value? Yes, I can. So remember, go to Harry's, that's HARRYS.com, and enter promo code TREK at checkout, and you will save $5 off your first order. That's a great deal. And now back to an episode that's a great deal of fun.
Yeah, I think not having it in the J.J. Abrams universe will dilute the franchise and confuse the goers, but at the same time, I'm a fan of the fan productions, like Captain Axanar, and I know mm-hmm. Michael Dorn has talked about doing a Captain Worf series.
Yes.
And, you know, I love the pre-reboot universe, and I would love to see it continue, but that's for us old-school fans. I think if we want to grow the community and keep the franchise alive, we need to double down on the J.J. Abrams universe, whether or not we like it.
I agree. And I think that the nice thing, though, right, is that they can't go back and take away what you already have. So you can continue to watch The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, all that stuff still exists. It's just that there's this new thing that people can get into and get excited about and then discover all this other stuff. And so it should be looked upon with glee and not suspicion.
Indeed.
Although I don't know if it – I'm a little suspicious about the whole you have to subscribe to CBS All Access to get it, but – CBS wants to make money. I understand.
Well, you know, if there's ever been a killer app, it's Star Trek.
It's true, and I'm going to subscribe to so I can watch it. So it's
case
a clever plan.
Yep.
And then I'll watch a whole bunch of other CBS shows like The Good
Supergirl?
Wife. Supergirl. I like Supergirl. I like The Good Wife. I think those are the only – my wife likes Madam Secretary a lot, so I watch that.
I actually don't subscribe to any TV or streaming services. I just pick up things on DVD years later.
Oh, you're so one of those delayed guys.
Yes. So I just finished season 1 of The Flash, and I understand that he just crossed over with Supergirl. In a couple of years, I'll get to watch it.
That's right. There's good things coming.
I can't wait.
Just wait.
No spoilers.
I won't say a word.
I'll just sign off Twitter for the next couple of years.
That's right. Just mute The Flash and Supergirl.
There you go.
On Twitter, you'll be fine. I do enjoy Supergirl, so when it comes out on DVD, give it a shot.
Look forward to it. I just picked up Agent Carter, and I'm also just now watching, speaking of Star Trek, Almost Human with Carl Urban.
Oh, yes, which was canceled.
I like my low commitments.
My wife and I enjoyed that very much. I also like, so once again, talking about J.J. Abrams' universe, I think that I like the story. I like I could have been more Star Trek-y. Yes, I agree. But I think the casting was fantastic. So
yes.
Kudos to them.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think they could have, maybe gender flipped one or more of the roles. But other than that, the people they picked, if they weren't going to do that, they picked the right people, for the roles.
I agree.
So we've spent a lot of time not talking about Two Banks. I wonder why. So I'm going to give a very high level outline of this show, this episode, because I was looking at – you can tell when you are in for a rough ride in a Star Trek episode when you go to the Memory Alpha page and it is very brief.
Oh, no.
Because that means that someone – usually – someone details every act, so there are five acts in a Star Trek episode, and there's seven paragraphs for each act.
Right.
There are three paragraphs for this entire episode, because, spoiler alert, I did not really think this was a good episode. But we can talk about that in a second. So what happens, basically, they find this planet, Voyager finds this planet, it has some fancy orchids on it or something, so they send Tuvok and Neelix down to gather the plants, because of course they do. They have this little scene where they talk to each other. Tuvok's annoyed by Neelix because Neelix is annoying. They take one of the plants and they beam up to, the Voyager. Carrie Kim has been fiddling with the transporter, so you really want to blame him for it, but it's not his fault. When all of a sudden, the transporter has fused Neelix and Tuvok and the plant into a new being called Tuvix, who has the memories of both Neelix and Tuvok, but is also a completely new person. Who doesn't want to die. It takes them a couple weeks to figure out how to unmerge them, and the doctor says, I'm not going to do it because Tuvix wants to live. Janeway says, well, too bad. I will do it by doing this extremely complicated operation by pressing a button. And Tuvix is dead, but Tuvok and Neelix survive.
Yay,
and the plant. I don't think the plant actually comes back, so I don't know what happened to the plant. But
good point. Never thought of that.
And the end.
Yay.
That is really the whole episode.
Well, it's been great recording this podcast with you, Scott.
Well, no, we didn't talk about what did you think? What did you think of this episode?
Gosh, well, it was... I didn't mind it. Since Voyager is set so far away from the rest of the Federation, it's rare that you have the opportunity to introduce a new cast character. And
true.
So, although we likely knew that the status quo would be returned by the end of the episode and there would be a reset button that would be pressed, there are still, at least for one episode, a new member of Captain Janeway's crew. And that is not something you see every day.
And I did think it was interesting that they raised the stakes, right? Because if it was Tuvix and he came up and, 12 hours later, they knew how to reverse him back to Tuvok and Neelix. No big deal. Nobody really got to know this new guy. Who cares? But it was several weeks. So he became, a part of the crew. He was doing stuff. He was, exhibiting new personality traits. He was clearly his own being. And kind of had a weird relationship with Cass, even weirder than it was before.
Yes.
And he really explicitly said, I do not want to die. And so they had to call Starfleet and see, did they call Starfleet and see if it's okay? No, I don't think that's a different episode.
Yeah.
And so, Janeway has to be ponder these great decisions. And I think one of the things that Voyager does best, probably better than any other Star Trek series, except perhaps Deep Space Nine, is make the commanding officer have to, really weigh these weighty decisions, and usually choose what you think is the right thing, but is a really tough, there's no wrong answer. They're both right answers. And so I find that interesting. So that part of the episode I really liked.
Yeah, I think Voyager was a lot grayer than The Next Generation. And as for Tuvix being on the ship for a couple of weeks, I had not seen this episode in 20 years since it originally aired in 96. And I remembered him actually being on board for months. Obviously, that's incorrect, but that would have made it an even more complicated scenario.
That's true, because he would have been, you know, everyone would have come to expect him to be there, and possibly even, you know, harkening back to our early conversation, maybe had a memorial already for Tuvok and Neelix, because, you know, they basically have died, and they've been merged and reborn as this new person, so who has their memories but isn't really them. And so I think the idea of this episode is super interesting.
Well, I like that it's so... Its counterpart has been explored so many times. Like, Enterprise had the episode where Trip was cloned, and they had to kill the clone. And then even Voyager had an episode where B'Elanna was split into her human and Vulcan... human and Klingon halves. And the original series had Kirk split in half a couple of times. And Deep Space Nine had its mirror counterparts. And Next Generation had Riker get cloned. So there have been all these episodes where there are two of somebody, and this is just the opposite. It's two people becoming one, and I don't think that manifestation of this theme was repeated at any other point in Star Trek lore.
No, I can't think of another example of this, although I'm sure somebody's listening to this and thinking of whatever example it is. And if you have an example, write in. Figure out how to write to me and tell me what it is, and I will stand corrected. But it does kind of reverse this age-old Star Trek trope. Also makes me wonder why anyone uses the transporters ever. But convenience over, I guess, the possibility that you will either be turned into a clone of yourself or merged with someone else.
Or murdered.
Or murdered, yes, as happens in many episodes and movies. Boy, those transporters.
Honestly.
But yeah, so there's not... we could talk more about this episode. I'm trying to think of any other interesting things that happen in this episode. I mean, the...
Well, there were a couple of things. At one point, Chakotay said that Tuvix was demonstrating that the sum can be greater than the parts. And that might be an argument in favor of keeping Tuvix on board. And that sets a dangerous precedent because they know that these plants cause beamed organisms to merge.
Yes.
And so... if they can create these super crew members, then they should just mandate that everybody pick somebody and merge.
Right. It's kind of like the eugenic wars all over again. They try and pair up what they think are the best pairings and then merge them all together.
But who else on Voyager could we merge? Like, can you imagine like Seven of Nine and Harry Kim?
Well, I think Harry Kim could imagine that. I'm here all night, folks. But also Harry Kim, another of my least favorite Voyager characters.
Aw, so. Poor Harry Kim.
Oh, Harry Kim. Nobody wants to merge with Harry Kim.
Oh. Yeah, but the DC comics did something similar. The Amalgam comics, where they merged DC and Marvel.
Oh.
And so, like, Captain America and Superman became Super Soldier. Batman and Wolverine became Dark Claw. Bizarro and Carnage became Bizarnage. Superboy and Spider-Man became Spider-Boy. Yeah, there was this whole thing they did, and it was really awesome, and that's kind of what Voyager was doing here.
I have never heard of these things. That's kind of like the Marvel What If series, right, where they could have that whole thing where the Watcher?
A thing?
Okay, yeah, he decides that what happens in this alternate timeline when the Fantastic Four never got their powers, but Spider-Man got them all or something like that.
Yep.
Or Galactus is really tiny instead of giants, or whatever they are.
So there are, just to get back to Tuvix, there are a couple of...
Do we have to?
Well, I know, like, you and I could go on and on forever about nerd pop culture. There are so many elements of the merging of Tuvix that don't make sense to me. Like, if it's just a one-off comic book like DC or Marvel, do whatever you want, but an entire hour where two completely antipodal episodes, or characters rather, merge and demonstrate... not a single sign of psychosis or neuroses.
Yeah, that did strike me as odd. Because Tuvok is very logical. Obviously, he's a Vulcan. He's mastered his emotions.
Right.
He is, I've often said, one of the best Vulcans in Star Trek because there aren't that many, but also because I think Tim Russ did a great job of playing Tuvok.
Yes.
And Neelix, I don't like Neelix, but he is certainly someone who is in touch with his emotions and exuberant and not afraid to talk about, you know, his feelings and kind of touchy-feely and very different than Tuvok. And you would think that melding the two of them into one would cause some issues, at least. But right off the bat, he's like, nope, I'm great.
Yeah, he's great. His clothes got merged despite having no DNA.
That is the weirdest one that I think is that, because, you know, Tuvok is obviously wearing his uniform and Neelix is wearing his crazy space pajamas.
Right.
And they merge into a crazy space pajama uniform hybrid.
And yet the Tuvok's organism does not appear to have twice the mass.
That is also true.
I don't know where it all went. Maybe it just went to like some sort of a hyperdimensional pocket, kind of like when Odo morphs into a rat. I don't know.
Exactly. I think I'm sure it's the same thing. Or he's just really dense. You can't tell but he's just got higher density.
But also, did their rank get merged? Because Tuvok's, I believe, was a lieutenant, which is the same as Tuvok. But shouldn't it have been the average of Tuvok and whatever Neelix was, which was what, like a morale officer?
Yes, he was. So what would that make him, like an ensign or something?
I don't know, but there's no justification for why Tuvok's should have had access to the bridge as a lieutenant.
No, and they let him now. Not that they shouldn't trust Tuvok's, because, you know, they trust both Neelix and Tuvok. But as we were saying, you would think merging someone, you'd want to study them for a while, maybe say, take a week or two off, see how this pans out. But right. No, they have Tuvok's, like, manning tactical on the bridge and running sensor scans and doing all kinds of stuff. Seems like not a great choice on Janeway's part.
Right. I mean, Janeway, to her, in her defense, she did start off slow and say, I'm not ready to have you on the bridge, but why don't you come to our briefing this afternoon? And as soon as he stands up in the middle of the meeting and says, sex! Everybody's like, what? He's like, sorry, I'm talking about the flowers. And Janeway's like, you're brilliant. Do you want to run our tactical station? It's like an immediate promotion. It's like something out of the J.J. Abrams universe. I mean, Captain Kirk is just getting promoted and demoted for catching a baseball. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, Starfleet has a lot of lax regulations, and they're cut off. I guess you could explain it away with, you know, they have a limited number of people, sure. And they still, like, the workload hasn't decreased, but their crew has decreased by one.
True.
And so they need someone to do stuff. And, you know, they're not going to get Harry Kim to do more, because can hardly do what he's doing.
Right.
I did hope that we could blame it all on Harry Kim, because he was fiddling around with the transporter. But it wasn't his fault.
No.
It was that darn plant.
But we have not yet talked about the very controversial decision that Janeway made at the end.
Oh, that's right.
And we got to get that in.
So the decision to demerge them, or is there another controversial decision?
Well, just the decision to be in this episode at all.
Oh,
no, I'm kidding. Yeah, because Tuvok's, the variable that they did not account for was that he does not want to die. And Janeway decides that he does and has him forcibly escorted off the bridge to sickbay, where the doctor says, I will not murder my patient. The Hippocratic Oath forbids me. And Janeway says, fine, I'll do it. And she does it.
Yes. And so I have a couple of problems with that.
Let's hear it.
I don't have a problem with her making the tough decision, right? That she wants to rescue basically her crew members. That I'm fine with. I'm fine with her. I liked the scene where Tuvok's basically is pleading on the bridge and saying, don't you all see what she's trying to do? This is, you know, she's trying to kill me. You should put her in the brig, all that good stuff. I like all that, right? But it seems to me that the procedure that they're going to do to unmix their DNA is probably kind of complicated. Now, I'm no space doctor, but I'm assuming it's complicated. And basically, she says, hey, doctor, you just press this button and it does it. And the doctor's like, well, yeah, but I'm not going to do it. And Janeway's like, okay, and presses the button and it's done.
Well, I'm sure developing the procedure was the hard part. Executing is easy.
Okay, so I guess the doctor, in his wisdom, decided, I will fully automate this process just in case somebody else needs to do it.
Yeah, he's an enabler. He still allowed the patient to be killed via a method he devised.
But he would not do it himself, so.
Right.
I suppose ethically he's in the clear, but it's still a gray area.
It is gray.
Because it's kind of like, I don't want to shoot this person, but here's a loaded gun.
Right. And I also question Tuvok's decision to not die, because if there is some Vulcan in him, then he should know the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one.
That's right. I actually, my wife was watching this with me, and I said that exactly to her, because it seems like, you know, hey, there are two people trapped in there. It's a tough decision. We like you, Tuvok's, but two is more than one, and we are stranded, and we need all the crew members we can get. Although the counter argument to that is that one of them is Neelix, so
another mouth to feed.
Exactly. Maybe we could just keep the one.
Right.
Who seems to be better than Neelix. Maybe not as good as Tuvok, but I guess you have to, you know, win. And I guess Kes wanted Neelix back because, okay, fine, they're in a relationship, whatever. But
and one thing that really would have made a big difference to me, which we don't find out, is once they are split back into their constituent parts of Tuvok and Neelix, do they retain their memories of being Tuviks?
Yeah, I don't think it's ever spoken of again. Well, actually, that's not true because Memory Alpha tells me that in an episode, Naomi Wildman, in Homestead, a Voyager episode, she mentions that this happens. But I don't think Tuvok and Neelix ever mentioned it again, which would be the interesting thing about, you know, do they have complete memories of each other's memories?
Right, because if they do have those memories, perhaps not of each other, but at least of the merge entity that they formed, then in my opinion, Tuviks didn't die, and thus his murder becomes a lot less weighty. It's kind of like this excellent novel called Kiln People, K-I-L-N, where people can clone themselves, but the clones die at the end of 24 hours. And the clone, its incentive to not go off and do whatever it wants is that if it gets back to its originator at the end of the day, it gets to upload its memories of that day back into its host.
And so there's
continuity of existence, and thus it doesn't really die. Whereas if it's nowhere near its host, then it dies, and those memories do not persist.
And that is true. Yeah, I don't think we ever hear from Tuviks again. So I can only assume that Tuvok has blocked all memory of the episode from his mind, and Neelix just forgot about it because he's Neelix.
Now, you said that Kes's relationship with Neelix is problematic, and I would certainly agree with that. But I think her being in this episode made it much more interesting. Like, if this had been a later season episode where instead of Kes, we had Seven of Nine on board, there would have been a lot less gravitas to the dilemma because Kes was very invested in Neelix, and she was becoming invested in Tuviks. And in the end, Tuviks tried to make her a pawn and say, you're my last hope to convince Janeway that I need to live. And it backfired, and Kes went to Janeway and did just the opposite.
Which is not
surprising. I can't imagine a more convincing argument to kill Tuviks than the one that came from Kes.
I agree. I think that this episode, as much as it does work, it would not work without Kes because she gives us that emotional center, right? I think that their relationship is creepy and weird, but it is in fact a thing.
Right.
And so it is a crucial part of this plot too, because it invests you in this, this relationship. Mm-hmm. And they kind of tiptoe around the weird kind of relationship that, you know, Tuviks still has feelings for Kes, but Kes is trying to figure out what that means and how she feels about the whole thing.
Very strange.
It is very strange.
Yeah.
They don't spend too much time on it, but they obviously mention it because it's a thing. And if they don't mention it, then they don't have the payoff at the end where Kes, you know, says, no, I want Neelix back because he's the one that I love. But that adds a layer to it. I still think overall this episode is not successful.
Well, there's just one more thing about his execution that worried me, which was Tuvok, of course, is a Starfleet officer. He signed up for potentially fatal missions.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Next Generation episode, Thine Own Self, Troi learns that you need to put the needs of the ship ahead of the individual, and she orders a holographic Geordi to his death. And so Tuvok should be prepared to accept those assignments, those missions. Was Neelix a member of Starfleet?
No, he was just, I think they gave him a comm badge, but just so he could, you know, talk to people. But I think he's just a dude that showed up on the ship.
Okay.
Much like Kes is just a lady who showed up and hitched a ride.
Right. I knew he was enlisted in the Delta Quadrant. I wasn't sure if he was made, like, honorary Starfleet. But if he's not Starfleet, then Janeway cannot order him to his death. She can order Tuvok, but not Neelix.
That's true. And she just ordered them to pick some plants. So nobody thought this was going to be a problem. And so I think what we're both saying is that Janeway made the right decision and that the underlying moral dilemma of this episode is not really that much of a moral dilemma because there are many reasons why it is clearly the right decision.
I'm not sure she was empowered to make that decision if half of Tuviks was not under her command, but I do agree it was the necessary decision.
OK, Ken, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Like I said, I've not watched Voyager in almost 20 years. It was a pleasure to return to it and to be able to chat with you about it. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure was all mine.